In today's episode, we talk about an enormous movie theater being built in Waxahachie. The Dallas City Council is raising the fees on new development and reconstruction licensing. And have we mentioned that Grandscape is amazing? Then we get into an enthralling conversation about note investing and a discussion on how important cash flow is in rentals. All of this and more will be oozing out of this raspberry-filled real estate donut we're offering up for you today for the low, low price of nothing. If you have not, please like, subscribe, copy the link, and send it to a friend, and reach out and tell us which part of this little podcast is your absolute favorite. There you have it. Skip around or ride it out until the end. We don't care. As long as you're here, we are happy. And now. Actually, it threw me. Here's what threw me off. They were so nice. I would go up there and they would talk. I would talk to someone. Oh, yeah, honey, let me get this. Oh, yeah, this is what you need. Go talk to him. Here, I'll get you at the front of the line. Yeah, don't worry about it. Oh, yeah. Then I'm thinking, oh, I'm taken care of. Yep. And then 3 weeks later, I would call to do something like, you don't have this signed off on yet. Yeah.
It wasn't like something that was like sitting on the beach overlooking the waves and having a cocktail. It was like,
yeah,
like you could go to a bar, but then to go to the beach was just go to the beach.
Yeah,
and they didn't want you to smoke. You couldn't have a cigar on the beach. You're not supposed to drink on the beach. Yeah, it was not nice. You know, Texas appropriate. So
loosen up a little bit, Hawaii.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
Well, good morning and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast. I am Ashton Hines and I am here with my good friend, mentor, and real estate guru in the Dallas area, Tavis Westbrook. What's up, Tavis?
What's up? Doing well. Doing well. It's, I love this time of year. It's springtime. And if it would just stay like this all year long in Texas, it would be, except for the bugs. I'm not a big bug fan in the spring, but besides the bugs, everything's great.
Yeah, I think our property values would be a lot higher because I think a lot more people, the summertime, I think for sure beats people down. The Texas Rangers built a dome for their baseball stadium pretty much because it was so miserable to play baseball and have people come out and watch baseball during that time of year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they won a World Series. They were that much better in the air conditioning. They performed that much better in the air conditioning that they won a World Series, which is awesome.
Had nothing to do with the management changes or anything else. It just literally
they just felt
played
so much
in
better.
Air conditioning space and they won the World Series. That's great.
That's right. That's right. So if we were just a little cooler, everyone would be so much more productive. This would be a utopia of business and living. So we haven't done this in a little while. If you are relatively new to the channel, I am the newbie of the group. I have my real estate license. I help people buy and sell homes. I've helped a lot of investors lately finding homes to invest in. But the person that's moving in from Tennessee or Florida or Colorado, I've helped them find homes as well. I flipped four houses. I have one long-term hold, but in general, just really learning a lot about the real estate business. Partway through my journey, I reconnected with a friend that I sort of had kept track of on Facebook, sort of knew of from a friend of a friend. I bought a property from him, and that was Tavis Westbrook. And he is a veteran of the business, especially in Dallas. He is a designer. He helps with blueprints. He can help, you know, design spaces. He actually just had an awesome write-up in a magazine, or not an online magazine here in Dallas, Candy's Dirt, about a property that he had designed several years back that went back on the market. But has also flipped over 200 homes, is a big wholesaler, knows a lot about the business, has a commercial building. So just a lot of knowledge. That's kind of our dynamic. I'm the new guy that asks questions. He's the guy who's been around a while that can kind of wax poetic on all sorts of aspects of the real estate industry. So that's what we do here. And once a week, we come to you with this episode that typically drops on Fridays or Saturdays, kind of depending on how quick to the keyboard I am with the editing, but we always get started with a little bit of a market update. Ah! in the DFW area, our MLS is saying things have leveled out a little bit. The rates are similar to what they were a few weeks ago. The days on market are around, depending on which pocket you're looking at, 35 to 40 days, typically, depending on the county. Or if you're looking at investment properties, which I've been doing a lot lately, the days on market creep up because it's a specialty product. It does take a certain type of buyer. And a lot of times you're working around tenants that are in a house and you can't go look at it. It just takes a little bit more effort to get to the finish line, I think, with some of the on-market MLS, the listings that are investment, quote-unquote investment properties. But so they tend to sit on the MLS a little bit longer. But in general, 35 to 40 days, things are selling for around 97% of the original asking, which we've talked about before, means that people are pricing pretty accurately from the beginning. They're having to drop just a little bit. There was a year ago, which we look at the rolling 12-month average. A year ago, it was over 100%. It was a really hot market. Things were selling for over asking. That's cooled down. Took a little while for people to figure out how to price with the new interest rates. But since they've been in this range for a few months now, things are looking a little bit more level on that front. In general, it's a seller's market. And I would say it's frustrating for buyers because there's just not a ton of inventory. We're still low on inventory, historically low on transactions, and everyone's kind of feeling it. We were having lunch, we were having a cigar the other day with a few guys that work for Myers, and they were saying that their closed numbers are down. Our numbers are down. Tavis, the deals he's been looking at, the deal flow coming in has been slower. So everyone's slow, and you're just trying to tread water, try to figure out some deals in the meantime. And at some point it'll break and we will have more stuff to do than we know what to do with. So that is the glance at the market in the DFW area right now. So after that, we always talk about a little bit of news.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From Dallas, Texas, The Flash, apparently official.
There's good news and bad news.
This is a massive story. Who wouldn't publish it?
We landed on the moon!
Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Yeah, so in DFW news right now, we had several stories last week. There was a lot happening. Specifically, we talked about the National Association of Realtors and the lawsuit that has been working. They had a settlement. It's still all over the news. People are freaking out about what this means for commissions, for buyers agents and all that. So we'll definitely keep track of that, but nothing specific new came to light this week that changed much of anything. On a local front though, there is a development down south. We talk a lot about our area up here. And actually, Tavis, here in a second, I want to hear about your day the other day at Grandscape. But before we get to that, let's talk about Waxahachie. We don't talk a lot. Waxahachie does not make our news segment too much. Waxahachie is a town just south of the DFW area. I bought my Ford truck from Waxahachie Ford, and it took me about 45 minutes to get down there, I think. And there's a little bit of a gap between the south edge of Dallas and Waxahachie, but it's definitely filling in. And one of the things that you will see there right off the highway, right off of I-35, is a large development, a huge movie theater, B&B Theaters. And a cool article came out. Evidently, this is a father had started this dream for a while. His son took up his cause. The father passed away. He was a developer. And he brought this theater to fruition. But what's neat about it is it looks like it's going to be one of the largest movie screens in North America will be at this theater in Waxahachie. And part of the theater complex are going to have some pickleball and some just different, fun things to do. So it's really cool to see that part of Dallas expanding. There's a lot happening up north. There's some stuff happening out east, Kauffman Way and all that. But Waxahachie, Red Oak has a lot. Have you ever flipped anything that far south, or have you done any big transactions down there, Tavis?
I haven't flipped anything that far south, no. Years ago, I've facilitated some traditional sales in that area, but I haven't done any fix and flips down there. It's quite, it gets challenging when you've got your team of trades and subs up this side of town, you know, it makes it tough on them, on how far they're willing to travel, right, for you.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate a few years back when we bought that property for my mom and surprised her, and I got everybody out to Canton, you know, which is about an hour and 15 minutes from me. And that was surprising, but it was kind of a unique thing. And I think all my trades jumped on board because it was for my mom, and they all played a part, you know, for that. But it's deals that far out, I typically try to wholesale them. Same thing with going to Fort Worth. I mean, years ago, I've flipped a few things out in Fort Worth, but it's the other side of the Metroplex. So makes it challenging sometimes, especially if you're in traffic, then it's like a 2.5-3 hour round trip. Right. So
yeah,
makes it a little bit more difficult.
You look at a map, and I've run into this, you know, with investors that I have that are looking, I have investors right now from all over the globe. I talk pretty regularly with a guy that he's from England, but he does business in Asia and his time zones are always off, but he wants to buy a rental here. He started off in the $200,000 to $250,000 range and said, that's going to be difficult. We can look. Now he's bumped it to around $350,000. And then I have some other people over, a lot of people in California, actually. I have a couple up in New Jersey right now, but they look at these maps and it's really hard to tell from a map. Well, I'm kind of considering, you know, White Settlement up to Justin, over to Lucas, and then maybe a little bit of Mesquite. And I don't know, what do you think about Waxahachie? You're like, we're talking about a 4 hour round trip if you wanted to, you know, check out a lot of those things right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really do have to narrow down some of these corners. And I'm sure you can find deals in a lot of the corners. There are hot pockets of this part of town. You can find decent stuff that's rental level that may not be just completely run down. And then up, you know, North Edge, you have your new builds. And, you know, like you do have over in East, you have a lot of new builds over East, a little bit up north of Fort Worth, a lot of new builds, but Waxahachie, Red Oak. I did an open house in Glen Heights, which is down that way as well. And that was a new build neighborhood. So it's interesting to, once you kind of spend a little bit of time in a corner you haven't been to in a while and you learn something, I enjoy that. That's one of the things I enjoyed about Home Health, is just getting to see all these little nooks and crannies of the town and hop into a cool coffee shop and just kind of learn a little bit. That real estate and home health, that's one of my favorite things, is learning different parts of the town. So, another news in Dallas, the city of Dallas. So my last house I flipped was in Dallas. It was on 1708 Mapleton. We did a great job. Tavis helped me with that. I actually bought that from him as a wholesaler. I was extra proud of that job. Specifically this last week, I went to go see another house that had been flipped on that street that was in just getting started when I started mine. And I went over and looked at it and kind of revisiting the same era, same street. And I thought, man, we did an awesome job. I was so proud of what we had done after walking through this other one from a respected flipper. He knows what he's doing. He has great design choices. And I just thought, man, we did a really good job with that. And I kind of went away thinking I would have picked ours. You know, I definitely would have, if I had to put these side by side and I was a buyer looking on that street at the same time, I would have picked the one that we did, even though ours backed up to a busy street. That was the big downside.
Well, so you learned a lot and you actually came out in the green. So you should be very prideful of that one. You know, that's like, and seeing that, the property that, you know, I just had the write up on with the Candy's Dirt, you know, 2300 Custer, you know, it's like that, you know, dagger in the side, you know, because when we sold it, we actually lost like $40,000 on the deal. And, you know, we got some of that money back from the incentive program with the city of Richardson for the tax aspect of it, which was kind of a cool incentive program that we did. And fortunately, we did that because that ended up helping soften that loss a little bit. It's one of those things. And now, of course, I see the owner, you know, they're selling the property and it's selling for probably $500,000 over, you know, what they paid. You know, we don't know what it sold for. It had multiple offers. They didn't do anything, right? I mean, they put some, you know, window treatments up, you know, and that's about it. So, in fact, they, you know, cut a tree down, a couple things like that. But I mean, other than that, they didn't do anything to the property. So it's one of those like thorn in the sides. You're great to see it be sold again and be appreciated, but it's just like, like, yeah, to know what we put into it, the heart and soul that went into it, and then not get a monetary value out of it, just get, you know, the pat on the back, like, man, what an amazing home. It's a great job. You know, it's like, yeah, it's great. I mean, somebody else reaping the financial benefit of it, you know?
Yeah. That reminds me of a story of a patient of mine. Her husband was a land developer. They bought a house. They actually developed a golf course community, Stonebriar near here. They lived there a long time. They had a huge house in the neighborhood at one point, and they used to travel all over the world. And one of the things she was so proud of, she had traveled to Europe, found this real specific inlay design for this floor, brought that idea back, had, you know, some people really replicate it, and, oh, this is European, blah, blah, blah. Well, then husband passed away. She decides to downsize, stays in the neighborhood and live nearby her old house, but, you know, she could near enough to know that they were renovating. So they, you know, sold the house. She goes by there. The first thing they did was rip that floor out and pile it up outside. And, sort of pride and joy as all these memories and stories. And, you know, you sell the house. It's like, well, I guess it's yours. But she was so, so bummed about that. But anyway, so I say all that to say is the city of Dallas, when we were doing ours, that was my first really foray into licensing and permits. And I spent a lot of time down at the Jefferson City Hall area trying to get permits. And they were nice, but it was really like pulling teeth to figure out exactly what all I needed. But I finally figured it all out. Well, the city of Dallas, as opposed to trickling up the fees over a course of several years, they hired a consulting firm and they said, just pull the Band-Aid, raise the fees. So there's a lot of these fees. They're going up several hundred percent. Now, for me, it was, $135. Now it's going to be $350. So by a percentage, it is several hundred. You know, $350 fee isn't going to kill me. But one of the fees, I think it was for a commercial development, it's going from $11,000 to $26,000. And one of them is, it's raising a fee from, I think, $500 to $1,200. I mean, it's pretty significant. Now, is it going to completely ruin a deal? No, but if you're doing these single family things like I do, you know, $1,000, $2,000 extra here and there really does make a difference. So it's kind of a bummer, but it sounds like they should have raised them a long time ago. They should have been incrementally raising them. And now they're just saying, look, just get caught up. It'll help you out with, you know, with the budget shortfall in this area. Just get it done. So I'm glad I got in when I did. And hopefully at some point I do another one. But if I do, it looks like it's going to be more expensive.
The remodel stuff is not horrible. But what they do is they charge a percentage of on new builds. And so, and they'll even, if your number is low on your build cost, they basically will project the build cost for you. So let's say that you could build something for $75 a foot. They'll basically be like, nope, that's too low. The average is 100. So they're going to bump their bill costs up for you for 100 and then tax you based on the percentage, or, you know, give you a percentage based on the, what it costs you to build it for $100 a foot, even if it costs you less. So, it's been several years since I've dealt with that with them, but we just had to learn and start building it in our spreadsheet, you know, and I have city fees in there, and we just kind of know what those city fees are going to be. And,
Those soft costs. That's the soft costs.
And God forbid, there's a water meter. It's got to be changed because it used to be a 3/4 inch pipe and it needs to be a 1 inch pipe and, all that good stuff. So,
I'm sure once you get used to it, you have checklists, but I was just flying blind. And here's what threw me off. They were so nice. I would go up there and they would talk. I would talk to someone. Oh, yeah, honey, let me get this. Oh, yeah, this is what you need. Go talk to him. Here, I'll get you at the front of the line. Yeah, don't worry about it. Oh, yeah. Then I'm thinking, I'm taken care of. Yep. And then 3 weeks later, I would call to do something like, well, you don't have this signed off on yet. I'm like, I didn't know I needed that.
Yeah.
Then I'm going, same thing. Oh, yeah, let me help you out. Oh, yeah, get over here. Oh, you just skip line right there. Let me go talk to him. Okay, great. This happened multiple times. And so I'm sure there was some area of some checklist I could have looked at. But it fine, like to the last minute. I mean, we sold the house. I think the day we sold the house, we got our last green tag, which is probably not how you want to do it.
I'll let you ask Eric some of those questions regarding
Yeah.
If he's using a third party to do his permitting process, or is he physically doing all that himself?
I can't imagine. So, yes, to preview, our next interview will be Eric Crutchfield, and we will ask some of those questions. I can't imagine that Eric is going down sitting at the Jefferson office. I bet he's done his time there. I bet he has spent plenty of hours sitting in those chairs. Yeah. But at some point, I think you hire an assistant or something and say, please, just go deal with this. Because if you're doing it over and over and over, man, what a beating. Yeah. I forgot to ask you. So tell us just quickly about, you know, we gave too much shine to Waxahachie. We got to get people back to our part of DFW. Tell us about your day at Grandscape the other day, because you posted about it on Instagram. It looked like you were in the Caribbean and just having a grand old time, but turns out you were right down the road.
It was funny. I posted a video sitting up on the patio and looking out to the surfers, and and one of my friends, Dakota, you reached out. He's like, where are you at now? Like, I was on vacation somewhere. I'm like, yeah. I'm in the colony. I'm at the Grandscape. Anyways, it was kind of impromptu. Sam, my nephew's getting into the business, and he wanted to meet up and talk about some upcoming appointments that he had, and just, you know, wanted to bounce it by me and kind of do some role play a little bit. And anyways, I was like, man, I'm kind of feeling the patio. Like, what's up? But we just kind of wandered through Grandscape, and I knew that they were building the surf spot. And I knew specifically, you know, we had talked about the mini golf.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about the surf side thing, because I knew that was coming, but I didn't know when.
Yeah, me neither.
Anyways, it's up and running. Is it Fireside Surf? I believe, yeah. So Fireside Surf, and I guess the premise of it is we weren't even sitting in the cool area, but if you're sitting in the cool area, like right next to the wave pool, then they have little seating arrangements around fire pits. So they've got fire pits for every sitting arrangement and stuff, and it's all shaded and super cool. So some people were sitting down in there. I think they were more the people that were actually participating in surfing. Families and stuff like that, but they had a full food menu, very, you know, a lot of healthy options, good stuff on the menu, like very Hawaiian inspired. In fact, you know, I asked for iced tea, and it was like tea in a can. You know, I think Shaka is the brand, which is you know, like a canned tea from Hawaii. Anyway, super cool. I had a great vibe. I had a full bar. You know, if you wanted to drink and have cocktails, Mai Tais, and all that, you could definitely do that. Bunch of fake palm trees, definitely very tropical feeling, and the wind and the weather was perfect that day. Like, we sat in an area with no covered area, and it was breezy, and you know, you had breeze and stuff coming off of the water and watching these guys surf. I mean, it was like literally sitting at, you know, it felt like you're at a beach in Hawaii watching the surfers and having a cocktail.
Yeah,
which, not to get off subject, but I was very disappointed in Hawaii from being somebody that likes a good cocktail and sitting at the beach, that there's no like beaches on, you know, there's no bars on the beach, right? They're very conservative in that sense. So like, there was like no spots I could find, at least on the main island on Oahu. I didn't go anywhere else, but
yeah,
it wasn't like something that was like sitting on the beach overlooking the waves and having a cocktail. It was like,
yeah,
like you could go to a bar, but then to go to the beach was just go to the beach.
Yeah.
And they didn't want you to smoke. You couldn't have a cigar on the beach. You're not supposed to drink on the beach. Yeah. It was not, you know, Texas appropriate. So
loosen up a little bit, Hawaii. Yeah. We've been to Maui a couple of times, and I can't remember the setups. I know a lot of the resorts have stuff that kind of go out on the beach and maybe
sure.
You know, kind of hang there. And we've been to St. Martin a few times. St. Martin's a great place if you just want to lounge and have a little beachside cocktail. And then what's interesting about that island too, is it's half Dutch, half French, and they have casinos. So on the French side, there's casinos. And so you can kind of be, it's a really cool island because you got the beach, you've got some really good restaurants, and you got the casino set up. It's kind of cool. But it's been a long time since we've been there, but a couple times early on when we were married, that's where our place was, because her parents had a little timeshare there. So
nice.
Well, anyway,
nice. So yeah, Grandscape, good things going on out there. You got the Pop Stroke, which is the Tiger Woods inspired golf course. It's owned by somebody else. I just recently saw at the gym this morning that I think they're opening is tomorrow, or no, Friday this week, I believe they're opening up Pop Stroke. And I found out that the Fireside Surf has not had their grand opening yet. So they are up and running, but they haven't had their official grand opening yet. And like I said, we just kind of stumbled on it. I wanted to go look at Popstroke, and then I saw that place, and it was active and, and working and operational. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And it was a perfect day to do it. I believe that was Monday afternoon. Like, the weather was great and breezy and felt good. And I mean, it's just, it's so bizarre. Like, what that place is turning into from,
I know,
from an entertainment destination, whether you have kids with you or you're just adults or it's a date night. And what was cool was, you know, we get out of there and I had called you and I said, hey, we're going to go over to Red Phone Booth. By the way, if you guys haven't done that, that's an amazing speakeasy, allows you to smoke cigars and have very fancy, you know, prohibition era cocktails and that kind of
thing. Take that, Hawaii. We smoke inside.
So really cool. But anyways, we were walking over there and we walk across the big field, you know, where they have the concerts and, you know, the big turf area in the middle of Grandscape. And here's a bunch of high school kids playing wiffle ball. And I'm like, how cool is that? Right. Like they just, they got done with school and it's like, hey, calling their buddies and let's go to Grandscape. And let's go, you know, play some wiffle ball in the middle of the turf. Yeah, and and cool. We can eat a pizza at Perry's. I mean, we didn't have that school, you know? Yeah. I mean,
they're about to have that zip line. They're putting in the zip line thing right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, something free that you could go do and hang out was like super cool from that perspective, you know?
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised they don't, and maybe it's part of the development that they'll have some new build, something you can buy into. Because right now they have the apartment complex there. But I don't think there's anything you can actually buy. You know, over at Legacy across the street, there's those really nice modern houses, that little neighborhood there, which is definitely walkable to Legacy. It would be interesting for them to put something like that over in the Grandscape area, because I may want to be on the list, because that is a really cool place. If you could just step out and walk to a lot of those, I'd be broke and fat, but it would be really, it would be a lot of fun to live right there. But I can't live much closer. I literally live about 5 minutes away. Yeah, I could ride a bike down there probably.
You're right, so down the street. Anyway. And there's definitely a lot more space to expand. So anyways, you can tell
start we're paying us, Grandscape. Jeez, we talk like about Grandscape every time. We need to be on the payroll over there.
Yeah.
All right, well, good deal. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. We won't do too much on this topic, but Tavis and I we've been working a lot of different types of deals, and we sat in on a cool class the other day. Keller Williams has this, an investment club, and they bring in different topics and different goal setting, and you can learn from different people. And this last week, they had someone come in, and Tavis actually knows her. Emily Cartwright. She still is involved in some apartment syndications, but they were getting hammered on that with interest rates, and they started looking for something different. They got into note investing. And the general idea of note investing is pretty much you become the bank. You can buy the paper that is affiliated with a mortgage on a bank. A lot of hers, she said, or the ones she's picking from, are typically owner financed originated, but in general, there is a secondary market. Everyone who's owned a house, typically a year or two into owning the house, you'll get a letter in the mail and say, hey, by the way, you know, it was a Wells Fargo loan. Now Bank of America is servicing your loan, or whoever it is. And your loan has been taken over by someone else. Well, on the back end, what has happened is they've packaged up a bunch of these loans. They've sold them to someone else. They've cashed out some of their profits, and they've sort of put off the servicing of those for another 25 years or 28 years. And there's this whole market that is at work. And so she was telling us about how you can put some of your money to work going to buy these notes. And you can do everything from buy one for $5,000 for this little bitty house that you might own for a couple years, or you could buy, I think she said she bought into one, I think it cost her $19,000 on the note, but the actual asset, underlying assets, a $300,000 house in Charlotte or something like that. Cool. Mm-hmm. So it was a really cool world to learn about. And I think, you know, Tavis has some details about that, but what it kind of brought up on our end is from an, you know, I'm talking to a lot of these investors, and a lot of the conversation I have is there's a few basic principles that you want to figure out to begin with. And is this appropriate for you? Is this the best route for you? And actually what's funny is after that meeting, that one girl came up and said, what should I do with this house? And what should I do? Okay, what is your goal here? Mm-hmm. And so I think some of the big questions are this. Do you want to be active? Do you want to be passive? If you want to be active, you've got flipping, you've got development, you've got short-term rentals, stuff like that, running a hotel maybe. If you want to be passive, you've got long-term rentals, you could be a hard money lender, you could be a private money lender, or you could do this note investing. And I'm sure there's others. There's 50 different ways to invest in real estate, but you could do some of this note investing. So it's one of those basic questions you have to ask yourself. Whatever place you're in, hey, I want to invest. I want to do something with my 50,000. I want to do something with my 100,000. Well, are you going for cash flow? Or are you going for appreciation? That's another question you have to ask yourself. Is this money I need right now? Or is it money that I can kind of put back into the deal and I'm just kind of riding it for appreciation, or I'm riding it for, you know, for a cap rate compression longer down the road. And it's a long-term play or whatever. Those are just kind of some basic questions you have to ask yourself, and that will help you make these decisions. Hey, I'm best suited for flipping. I'm best suited for long-term. I'm best suited to partner up with someone and just say, hey, here's the money. You know what you're doing. Go for it. And then this one here, the note investing, was a really cool little side business that there's a whole world involved in it that, I wasn't fully aware of. Did you know much about the note investing thing before we went to that class?
Not on this level. You know, like obviously, Tabitha works for a huge investment banking firm, and you know that's what they do on a very, you know, large, heavy scale of anywhere between 80 to $500 million worth of, you know, loans they're buying a week kind of thing. So, I knew about it from that level, you know, and what that looked like. I didn't understand all the nuts and bolts, but it made a lot of sense on a low level of buying stuff like sub 100,000. And on a note, and let's say that the note had 70,000 left on it and another 10 or 15 years left on the note, and you're able to buy it at a discount. So you're buying that note from the current lender for like 50,000. So you're buying the note at less money than there is to pay it off. And some people would say, how is that possible? Well, it's possible because of the time frame of what's left on the note, right? So the interest accrued over the next 10, 15 years means that the note is more valuable than what the actual note is, right? Because of the interest that's on the note. So that was eye-opening. And so they're buying it not only at a discount for the note now, and that allowed them to have leverage of selling the note to somebody else or selling a partial of the note. And she kind of gave the diagram of like a pizza, right? And kind of split it into, you know, six slices, if you will. And you know, essentially you could partial out three slices and that paid for what you paid for the note because of the value of that. And therefore, you know, basically the note's paid for by these other aspects and you get the cash for it. And so there was a lot of different creative ways of looking at it. And then, of course, you know, if the borrower defaults and you had the right to foreclose, and there's different states that had different means to it and different options, and you could trade notes, so you could buy it and you could essentially flip it to somebody else. You know, if you bought it with a $30,000 discount and then you turn around and sell it to somebody else at a, you know, $15 discount or a $15,000 discount, and you make the $15,000 spread. So there's a lot of different things like that that was very unique.
And there's a lot more moving parts because, you know, like for instance, the partials, you get this loan and then you mark it up just a little bit percentage wise, you sell off to someone else, it's still a decent deal for them. And they're maybe making 7% a year on their return, but it's going to pay it off. Let's say it's a 30-year loan. Well, you do the math to where now they're paying just enough of your portion of it to where it actually pays off, let's say 5 years early. So then the last 5 years, free and clear, and you're right. Getting that basically for nothing. You know, you're not in that deal for any money. Then this other investor paid it off, and you're good to go. And then the other thing, you can buy non-performing loans, which is someone who's not paying their mortgage. They're threatened to be foreclosed on. They're somewhere in that process. It's quote unquote non-performing versus performing, where you're paying every month on time. You're good to go. So you have those two categories. Well, if you buy a non-performing loan, obviously, you're going to get a much larger discount because it's a lot riskier. and you may have to foreclose and you don't really know the underlying asset because it might be some property in the middle of Iowa. I don't have any idea what a farm is worth in the middle of Iowa. So you're taking these risks. But if you can go to that owner and say, hey, new sheriff in town, let's work at this out this way. I'll work with you. Let's lower the payment. Let's do this and that. Well, now all of a sudden you've converted this non-performing loan into one that is performing. It's worth a lot more. It's worth more on the marketplace if it's something that actually is going to be a consistent paycheck. So then you could maybe flip it. And it's basically like flipping a house. You're flipping this mortgage. This is so super, super interesting. But it brought up this broader idea, specifically, like for instance, a girl who came up to us afterwards and, hey, I have my father or grandfather died. I have this house. I need to know what to do with the money. What would you do with it? It was a really broad question. I've got $120,000. Mm-hmm. What should I do with it? Well, there's a lot you can, there's a lot of options. Do you want to be hands-on? Do you want to be cash? You want to go after cash flow? What are some of these basic questions you have to answer for yourself? Then you can go in and find what's the best suited for you. And I mean, I would say a lot of people kind of want to blend, I don't just want cash flow and you want the crappiest house out there, but as long as the cash flows, although there are some of those people. And then I have another investor right now that's looking at a house and it possibly could lose $100 or $200 a month early on, but it's a brand new build on the edge of town. The appreciation's probably going to be pretty good. And in a year or so, he'll be even on rent and then he could go up on rent. And this is going to be a nice house for a long time. So he's debating on that math. That's the opposite side of, okay, I'm going for appreciation. How much of a negative cash flow would I be comfortable with? So you just have to answer some of those questions for yourself when you're going into some of these investments, and you can for sure find a fit for any situation, I am sure. Speaking of, would you, in theory, would you go negative on cash flow just to get an appreciation? Is that something you would do?
I have. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have for sure. And I would say that, I'm pretty close to that on a couple of rentals right now, my interest rate's so low, but the taxes and insurance have gone up and I've got good tenants. And one in particular, I've got an older lady who's been in there and I ended up raising her last year. She had been in there, she's going on 6 years now. And last year I ended up having to raise it at least a little bit to get up to try to get close to, breaking it even, because I was negative cash flow based on taxes and insurance. I mean, on the surface, the numbers look good, but taxes and insurance, man, just jumping through the roof when you've got, I think my insurance used to be $1,500 a year. And I just got a renewal policy in the mail yesterday with replacement costs. And I can't really argue the replacement cost so much, right? And I think it's $3,700 now, it's hard to make that up. And then you got taxes that go up, and it's Dallas County. So yeah, I mean, the answer is yes. I mean, and if you look at it from like return on equity, the number's low, but it was the first house I ever bought. And my interest rate's at 3.875. So
yeah,
it's paying it down. The equity's, I've got a good amount of equity in there. The tenant's good. House is being taken care of. And the market rent is definitely probably $600 more a month than what I'm getting right now. But, that's where you kind of, do the right thing. She's in her 70s. She wants to stay there. She's got family that can help her out, pay the bills, and she loves it there. And she treats it like like it's a castle. So, anyways,
you're a nice guy. You're a nice guy.
It's like you with Brandy.
I know. I learned it from you. I learned it from you, Tavis. We're nice guys, but every once in a while we lose a little bit of money.
I've pitched this. Like, I've got a nephew who a few years ago pulled equity out of his house, and the idea was pull it out. And this is back when you kind of do the math of like $50,000-$60,000 to buy into a sub $200,000 home. That would rent for $1,400 to $1,600 a month, and so the math made sense from that piece. to kind of buy into something and get a rental, get an investment property and kind of get his feet wet and put that in as far as the cash needed to buy into the deal and finance it. Well, then rates went through the roof. So mm-hmm. now those numbers don't make sense. And not only did rates go through the roof, but that $175,000 home that we were looking at is now $250,000, $260,000, you know, mm-hmm. $300,000. So it doesn't make sense. So, I mean, I think he's got his money in a high yield savings account now, and he's working that in the meantime, yeah. which is probably doing better than maybe what the rental would be doing hypothetically, except the appreciation. I mean, the big thing he would have gained by if we found one would have been the appreciation versus the cash flow, you know. For so sure. I don't know.
So you factor in a little bit of tax, you know, some tax that's the thing. And the higher your basis is, like let's say it's $350,000 house, he may be short a couple hundred dollars a month, but the appreciation on that is going to be, let's say, 5%. Which is average over a long period of time in Dallas, let's say 5%, that's 17.5 a year. Well, you know, to me, you're trading that off. Plus then you have some tax depreciation, you have some interest payments that you're going to be able to write off. And so when you look at the big picture and you're adding to your net worth, you're basically paying $200 a month to kind of drive this car that's helping you overall.
Yeah.
But I also understand just in principle, going into something and say, look, I'm not necessarily wanting to lose money every month. On the surface, I don't want to lose money.
Sure.
But if you think about it of like, hey, you're paying this money to control this vehicle for a while, and in 2 years you could sell it and probably get out. You know,
who wouldn't spend $2,400 a year to invest in their investment portfolio if you're gaining appreciation and your principal is being reduced every year, especially I think I have them on 30-year notes. At one point, I had them on 15-year notes where, you know, the payment was higher, but they were chipping away at that at the equity or the principal quite a bit, right? Now it's less, but because the interest rate's still so low, it's still attacking the principal pretty heavily, right?
Yeah.
To where every year you're getting this decrease of, you know, call it $5,000 a year or something like that it's dropping. You know, with that principal's reducing. So not only are you getting the upside of appreciation, which, you know, we own these properties through, you know, for many years now. So we owned them through this big boom that we had over the last couple of years where things were progressing at 10% a year. And as that property gets more valuable, you know, that not saying that it's necessarily doing a 10% appreciation right now, but that number gets pretty heavy. If you got a $300,000 mm-hmm. property, I mean, that's $30,000 a year, right? Plus that principal reduction, that's another $35,000. So it's just all different ways to look at it. I mean, we talk about it from a, you know, how do you want to invest from a cash flow perspective now, and how do you want to invest long-term wealth building? There's all different ways to skin a cat, you know, and that's why it's mm-hmm. important just to have these conversations with other people and be around other people that have these conversations. You know, it's just like being at Red Phone Booth the other day and talking to Josh about mm-hmm. some of the things that I've got going on and getting his professional opinion on some of the things that I'm looking at and kind of moving around, you know.
Yeah.
And it's okay to be diversified too, where you don't have to sell everything. Like if you look at it from like return on equity, then that would mean like sell my whole portfolio and move it into something else. But then I'm trapped, right? I mean, one big thing that he did say was, for instance, you know, single family gives you the most, even though it's not liquid, you know, a liquid asset, it gives you the most, you know, the best projective of selling that asset to gain liquidity. The easiest access, right? The easiest mm-hmm. access to is selling a piece of real estate and getting liquidity because it's not part of a big portfolio. You know, you're selling an individual asset to a consumer, you know, as long as depending on when your rent is, when your lease is up, you know, if you're trying to sell a lease occupied property, then it's going to be tricky and tough because the numbers aren't going to make it. It's going to be much more valuable to sell to a consumer that wants to buy it for themselves than it is to sell to an investor who wants to take on the tenant.
But in general, it's easier to sell a 3-2 than a 5-unit commercial building or a really specific use piece of land or an ag land. I mean, there's buyers out there, but putting yourself in that position of actually owning an asset that's always going to be desirable is another thing too.
Right.
So anyway, there's always there's a lot of aspects to look at it. It was fun hanging out with those guys the other day from Myers to hear their perspective on things. And we will continue to bring you that knowledge in other interviews. We have Eric Crutchfield coming up, and we've had several great interviews recently. Please go back. And I am proud to announce that our interviews are now on YouTube, and I will link that to our show notes. I will put it out on some social. So Real Estate Heavyweights, we will make sure that you have the right link and all that stuff. I don't know much about all of that. I know it's up. I know we're still making some tweaks. It's not perfect, but it's up there. And I think we have about 25 episodes up at this point. I have a VA that's been doing a really good job trying to get everything cleaned up for not a fortune, which is really nice and for me. And I'm really happy that it's up and we can send those links to people. It'll be a free and easy way to check out the podcast. So we will link that. Check that out as well. Yeah, I know you love our beautiful voices, and now you can put our beautiful faces to the dulcet sounds that come through your headphones on a weekly basis. So anyway, if you have not, follow us on social. I'm Dallas Real Estate Guy on Instagram, and I'm also on Facebook, Ashton Hines, Travis without the R is on Facebook and Instagram as well. He has Tavis Westbrook Designs. Go check that out. Has all sorts of cool work and renderings he's done for other people. He's doing a project right now in Canyon Creek for Aaron, our investor that's doing the midterm rental. And I'm sure those pictures will be going up soon to kind of show you the progress there. And if you have not subscribed to the podcast on Spotify and on Apple, and send the link to someone and tell them that they definitely got to listen, because we're doing our darndest to get you some good information. And I think it's something that a lot of people could benefit from. So spread the love, and we would definitely appreciate it. Until next time, we will talk to you soon.